In under an hour, civilization as we know it ends. Much like in the past, my X-Men and I are your best hope to avoid that future.
If you're wrong, Xavier, my hand will be forced.
We have been here before, President Kelly. If you don't trust me, trust my X-Men.
That's right. Let's go! I mean, come on! What else do I need except for that? Good Lord, heading into the the penultimate episode, X-Men 97. Welcome to Marvel Movie Talk. We are talking about X-Men 97, Episode 9, Tolerance is Extinction, Part 2. As always, I am Christian Blatt. Right there next to me, you see the one, the only, the Nate Miller. Hello, sir.
Hello. I'm so excited that I muted myself out of excitement.
And of course, with us, the great David Brody. Thank you so much for being here, sir.
Sure, and I mutated myself, so not to be confused with what Nate did.
Right. No. We don't want that. And making her triumphant return from the Mediterranean, the star of one of the stars of the movie that Richard Roper wrote in the pantheon of brand origin stories. Unfrosted is so dreadful it makes Flamin' Hot look like The Social Network. And he's not wrong. Katie Hampton, thank you so much for being here. I saw a chicken suit in that movie. So that was you, right? In Frosted.
Yes. The person in the chicken suit was me, but you barely see it, and I'm not in the credits anymore, so we're good.
Well, whoever took you out of the credits, you say thank you to that person.
I will.
All right. Well, we started off with the trailer for today's episode because it doesn't spoil anything from upcoming episodes. It's actually all from this episode, and I could not have been more excited to see the things that we saw in the trailer. And we'll talk about some of the other things that we got to see in this episode. But for any of you who know me and the way that I talk about the X-Men, you would know that what I was most excited about was something that I had Google compute the math for me, something I've waited 12,653 days for. And that is to finally, once again, see Wolverine in the brown costume where he belongs. Because that was September 16th, 1989. There was a pilot called Pride of the X-Men. And he had the brown suit in that. And never again. So finally, I got to see Wolverine looking the way he was supposed to. Might have been short-lived. What happened to the brown costume? We're going to get to all of it. But I want to start, because we're nothing if not chivalrous on this show. Katie, you've been away having a great time. But we have been here in the trenches doing the hard work of watching X-Men 93 or 97, whatever you want to call it, X-Men 97, and talking about it. And also doing the hard work of not being on time is our buddy Count Eric Connor. And if you, our visual audience, can see the positioning of the image behind us, Nate, it looks like you're wearing the brown suit. So I think that what
Where's
else?
That yellow.
No,
get the shoulders.
No, the other one's the yellow one.
You're all the right. Yellow one.
So I want to give Katie the opportunity to talk about what you've been thinking about the show, but mostly talk about the new episode. But I think you missed three episodes. So tell us what you thought about where the show has gone. I think the first one you weren't here for was Life Death Part 2.
Yeah, which was when I finally got to watch that was like, oh, okay, wait, what? And things have just gone off the rails. And I feel like I'm going from one episode of emotional distress to the next, and I'm loving it. It's really fun. I'm glad that Storm is back. So glad. I didn't know it was gonna happen that fast, but glad that it did. I thought the whole journey of that was incredible. So much emotions going into this current episode that like I I can't even think about the other episodes because this episode is so fresh in my mind right
now.
And like, we went through quite the journey, especially with people who thought that Xavier was dead.
There were people who thought he was dead?
Yeah, there was a couple.
I mean, on the show, I guess. But
that's what I mean.
Yeah, and I was looking at this before we started, Daniel Drew. That was relaxing and uneventful. I can't wait to predict the finale. What if it ends with Onslaught? What if it does end with Onslaught as a cliffhanger?
Yeah.
And Daniel
feels
Drew's
like that's
asking,
where they're going.
Daniel Drew's asking for adamantium extraction insurance, anybody, everybody. And of course, Cammy Egan, what a terrific episode. We're talking about all of it. So yeah, this, every week there's always that feeling of like, oh man, they really, they packed a lot into the show this week. And this is no exception. Nate, your thoughts on episode 9 here?
Well, as I said last week, if they do the extraction scene, I might die. And I definitely had heart palpitations and saw it coming. And just it was awesome. This episode was so good. They really have nailed the comic book storytelling of like packing a lot into a little and expanding that to this like 3-part episode is like, I think it's really benefiting because we're able to get that breakneck like pace that we've had, but within kind of a longer context of a story, and the characters, everyone gets their little shot and like, it's just awesome. It's nice to see Xavier back. There's the suits, you know, there's so many good like frames that are just really cool, like X-Men looking cool together stuff. Like it was just very satisfying. It made me very excited for the finale, but also I'm starting to get sad now knowing that it's about to end and we're going to have to wait for more. But I loved it. It was so good. I watched it twice. It was so good.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there's a lot of questions about, what happens next because, you know, as we talked about, Mr. Brody, Bodomeo told people like, hey, you might want to read up on Fatal Attractions. And look, I'll believe it when I see it just because Magneto started to rip the adamantium out of Logan and then the episode ends. Let's see if it actually stays removed. I think that it's a crazy thing that I remember when it happened in the comics. So I can only imagine somebody watching this that had no idea that it ever happened to Wolverine, that his adamantium was ripped out. When he actually got the claws inside Magneto's heart, there might have been a question of, I guess it can't happen here. But that thought was like literally half a second because of how it went. Mr. Brody. I wanted to get your thoughts on what we've seen here in episode 9.
Well, a great episode. On the heels of me loving Wolverine last week, it was great to see him angry and fighting, although, you know, it didn't last long. And it you know, Bo DeMeo in a tweet said issue 25 of the X-Men is his all-time favorite comic. And 25 is, you know, when this happens. When the adamantium gets taken out. So I'm not hopeful that it's not going to happen. But I love that they spun a lot of plates in this episode. They dealt with Cable and who his mother is. And they dealt with Sinister almost telling Jean when she was replaced. And then her almost embracing Madeline Pryor. You know, so all the threads were kind of being pulled throughout the episode. And, you know, the fact that Morph can be Hulk anytime he wants, feel like you should do that a little more often.
Maybe once or twice an episode if, you know.
Yeah, maybe whenever you're in trouble, turn into the Hulk, forgot, you know. So there was a lot going on. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I love that they touched on so many things. As Nate said, they jammed a lot into the episode, like in the comics. I felt it was very comic booky, in the fact that every couple of panels was another, oh, that's cool. Very full episode. Loved it.
Yeah, no. And for our visual audience, sharing these images of Wolverine 75 and X-Men 25, I'm reminded of just what a what an awful time the 90s were in terms of comic books. Stupid hologram covers. And if they didn't have a hologram cover, they would be pre-bagged with a trading card in there. That because you the idea was like, well, you're going to have to buy one that's not pre-bagged. No, I'm just going to rip open the one that has the bag on it and not even remember if I kept the card or not. Anyway, I might need to digress.
Christian kept every one of those cards. Don't lie.
Yeah, but I mean, I still opened all the bags. I'm like, no, I think these comics aren't good enough to buy two copies of from this era. These two, of course, telling a tremendous story, but just in general, when those things happen. Mr. Connor, fresh off the heels of taking his son and one of his son's friends to see a, I was going to say the entire Star Wars marathon, but you saw 7/9 of the Star Wars saga at the El Capitan.
Technically, it might have. Yeah, we made it through about half of episode 7. Yeah. And then I realized more important than sitting through two movies I've seen many times on the big screen yet again is getting my son home safely. And around 3 a.m, I'm like, I'm not sure I can make that promise about an hour from now. So I put his safety ahead of it, and he's still mad at me about that, by the way.
I would be too. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, do you look? Are you a fan of these movies or not, Eric? You know, you can spend 16 hours in a theater watching them, but if you can't spend 20, what's the point?
Yeah,
Eric, they don't have Uber where you live.
Well, except my car was there, so I'd have to come back. Hey,
sacrifices, man. Sacrifices.
I have a thumb. I mean, I could have gone old school.
No, but you made the right decision.
I really did. Yeah, I'm very proud of you for doing that.
If you hear the sound of your arm breaking, that's a good time to tap out.
If you left before part 9, you definitely made the right choice. So.
Well, yeah.
He did better. He did the best thing he could do. He left before after episode 3? He left before episode 8.
6. So, okay, we're not having this discussion.
No, I know. That's why I'm saying he did the best thing he could do. And honestly,
if you had done
what I planned on doing, which was I would go 7 hours in, just go for episodes 4, 5, and 6 and go home. That's what I was thinking of doing.
Complain they didn't show Rogue One.
Okay, Grandpa.
Okay, boomer.
Exactly.
None of us are boomers, even.
But at the same time, I did take my son to see the Phantom Menace on Sunday. So I sat through 1/9 of the trilogy. So there's that. But 1/9
that felt like a lot longer.
Well, it's just you sometimes forget how many racist aliens there are in Phantom Menace. But
that's why I
don't know if this is the conversation that we need to be having right now. But I mean, there's a lot of them.
You don't realize until you rewatch that movie, and you're like, oh wow,
the Trade Federation.
Watto. I'm not giving them full.
Every
Misa have no idea what you're talking about.
Say every single the big boss one was he was the worst. You know, But about X-Men 97.
Yeah, looking for that segue, not finding it, but here we are. First of all, Katie, honeymoon's over. Welcome back.
Seven week honeymoon.
All the great looking food that it looked like you were having, but now you have to have lunch at Sbarro, so enjoy.
I know, like every single day, and I'm just so tired of Sbarro.
You seek it out now. Yes. You're trying to follow that dragon.
I just need that taste of Italy.
Right. Yeah. Well, this taste of the X-Men I thought was fabulous. Episode, what is it, 9? Oh, is that bell? Did I get the bell? I got the bell! Usually I don't get the bell for the good. Usually
that was definitely bell-worthy.
Look, if Nate says it's bell-worthy, then
I know. No, Nate's
a thing. Because Nate hates the bell.
If Nate had the bell, it would ring once a millennia, even then by mistake. So I mean, this episode's great. I mean, it's just echoing what you fine folks said. This was, I'm amazed at how good this show has been. And I'm amazed, speaking of the kid who dragged me to see all those Star Wars, he hasn't watched it yet. And I'm stunned because he's like the MCU movie snob. So he doesn't have time or patience, whatever, for the TV shows or for, God forbid, an animation.
Well, this is so much grittier.
It is the best Ben X storytelling we've had since the X-Men cartoon of the 90s. With I will again put X-Men 2 and First Class and
Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past.
And X-Men Origins Wolverine. Yeah.
Of course. Well, yeah, just because the only time they really got Deadpool right, you know.
Gave us the gambit we all wanted. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. With a big stick. But this storytelling has been so good, and it's rewarding. I mean, we're obvious fans, but I feel like even the most casual of watcher, if you're not feeling something here, then you're not feeling anything. And by the way, I love the quiet moments. I love the character moments. You'll see even the screen grabs. Like, I like the bonding moments between strong female characters.
Yeah,
I
mean, that was
it's so good, and I'm so sad that Mayo has been put to the side here, because I feel like his storytelling here has been so terrific.
So I'm sorry, but you're saying that you're disappointed that Disney decided to hold the Mayo.
There.
Hey!
Hit the bell.
Hit the bell for you.
No, that does not deserve the bell.
No. It deserves something, but a bell ain't it. Yeah, I mean, these moments I found like that, and then the beautiful moment of her hugging Jubilee, you know, and it held for an extra moment. Like, she holds her. And then it was almost like it could have just been one shot, but instead it cut back and it cut again. I think it's the shot. Yeah, this one here. Mm. It's actually a series of shots. And it's just so beautiful and emotional. And honestly, that was what was lacking when they saw Xavier was alive. There was like no reaction to it. But here, this is a moment of how just thrilled she is. And bye. Yeah. I'd rather look at Daniel Drew as well.
Well, Daniel Drew liked my joke, so I appreciate that. Although, what does that say about Daniel that he liked that? But yes, obviously, a lot of the reuniting of these characters, I think, was every bit as important as, you know, the actual happenings in the episode. You know, just getting to see everybody back together again. Some of the very quick divisions that are emerging amongst the team. And one of the things that I need to highlight is the decision to, you know, I'm excited about Wolverine's brown costume, but this green Rogue costume that is from a very different era when she had very short hair. I was very excited to see that they went with that. You know, she had it on. She was like an overcoat over it at one point, but I thought it was great.
It was Gambit's coat.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. She ended up
giving to Xavier. Like, I'm done with this now.
Exactly. The worst thing, Kemi Egan, who asked, how long were you waiting to tell that one? I honestly didn't think about it until the way Eric said it. I think it would be worse if I'd been sitting on that joke for the like month since we knew he got fired. But do I feel bad for it? Maybe a little, but that didn't stop me from doing it. So I think that it's kind of a good place to start. I think that they reasoned out logically Rogue and Roberto are the two who you're like, yeah, I could see them wanting humanity to pay, you know. And again, Roberto's still not even dealing with his father. You know, he's like, he's this pissed at his mom. Just wait until his a-hole of a father shows up. What do you think, Nate, about sort of these two being the ones that, I don't know, they wait like half a second before they decide. And look, you know, I mean, Roberto had been there for like half an episode. So it was like, yeah, I don't really have any loyalty. But what did you think about it, Nate?
Rogue was obvious to me. Part of me thought, is Cyclops maybe, but with Cable being there, probably not. The Roberto, I mean, I don't, maybe surprising is not the right word, but it doesn't feel super earned to me, because this is the guy that like wasn't even really accepting of himself as being a mutant, you know, most of what we've seen so far. And he's just barely started hanging out with mutant, had one bad altercation with his mom. And then the next time we see him, he's fully in an X-Men suit, which we have not seen before.
Yeah.
And then now he's switching sides to me, this kind of carries on the issue I talked about last week of that there feels like there's parts of his motivation that are missing. So I don't, it didn't bother me. I wasn't like, no, that doesn't make sense. But I also wasn't like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like Rogue, like who lost someone and has a connection to Magneto and like identifies as a mutant and feels like this is the only thing that we can do because people are dying. Right there, the motivation makes sense. For Sunspot, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I guess, Drew has a good point. He's young. He's supposed to be young. He's a teenager, so he could be kind of rash. But I don't know. I feel like this just again adds to the parts of like it emboldens the parts of his character that haven't really been fleshed out and addressed enough, I think, for a character that's just been introduced this season.
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense. It's an interesting thought, the idea that Cyclops might have been like, you know, I just feel like it sort of flies in the face of that character, the way he's been defined. But that certainly would have been interesting if he'd sided with Magneto. But go ahead.
Well, my thing with Cyclops is that there was that one scene where he was talking with the interviewer. And he was like clearly kind of getting frustrated, and I could see them, you know, in the comics there is a line of where Cyclops does kind of become almost a Magneto-esque character of like a militant, we have to, you know, defend ourselves viciously or ferociously from the humans, whatever it takes kind of stuff. So I could see them laying the breadcrumbs for that, but also again with having Cable there, and now it's kind of grounded him a little bit, and even like obviously stuff's rocky with Jean, but with Cable there, it's kind of created this, I think, a healthier environment. And so we've seen him kind of step down from that place he was in the interview. So I'm glad that they didn't do that, because I think it would have been really rushed and forced. But in my mind, after Rogue went, I'm running through the options of like, who are the other people that could go? And Sunspot to me was not one of them. That was a surprise to me.
Yeah, I was legitimately surprised by that. But I think more surprising would have been almost anyone else. You know, I think you're making a compelling point about how angry Cyclops has been this season, but you know, it would be hard to imagine someone else. Daniel Drew, though, how much fleshing out did we have for Jubilee? 9 episodes in the original show, not many. I think that's fair. And nowadays we're used to more character development. That's kind of what the point that I was going to make to something you said, Eric. That I mean, I think that this show is so much better than the original because it's not held up to the standards of 1992 network censors for children on Saturday morning. Yeah. And, you know, they haven't gone full Invincible, you know, they haven't gone to, you know, that next level of it being a purely adult show, but I think they have more flexibility with some of the violence we'll talk about in this episode. But also I just think that these mature themes, this storytelling, I think is, you couldn't have even gotten close to this in the original show. Mr. Brody, what do you think about the division of the team into two teams, and then also there being the two characters who are hashtag Magneto was right?
Well, the blue gold thing is right out of the comics, right? They divide up the team, and it always interests me how when they break up the team, the right people are in the right location for the story to move forward, right? Had Wolverine not been there, the big thing wouldn't have happened, right? Had he been slicing up robots, I would not ever send the guy with the metal skeleton after Magneto. to me that seems like a mistake, and so I would have sent him after the robots because he can cut up the robots. Although how Beast slit the arm off a Sentinel with his little claws, I'm not really sure. They didn't show it. They just showed him swinging, and then the arm was cut off. I would have sent Beast after Magneto. The less metal around him, the better. You know, that's just my opinion on that. But as far as who went with Magneto, Rogue is an obvious. I mean, she's an anti-hero. She's a villain sometimes. She slept with him numerous times, so of course she's going to go with him. Plus,
all right. Well, we're not gonna slut shame her here. All right. There's literally one person on Earth that she can be with.
She can finally sleep with someone.
What I'm saying is, she obviously slept with him because if you have sex, you obviously love the person. That's how that works.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. we all. Hey, Nate, so, Nate laughed a little too hard at that.
Right. So she loved him enough to give her body to him. So, of course, she's going to side with him. Plus, she dropped Trask off the roof. She's not exactly adverse to killing humans.
Brody, are you saying that Rogue is an incel?
And why do? How come when you say the term give her body, it's actually creepier than... Yeah. than...
I was actually going to say, can you never say give her body again on this show? Okay. But I feel like the point you're making is definitely
a new
right.
podcast by David but, Brody.
Katie, I have to say that you have made the point that I don't think has ever been touched on that I've heard of, that Rogue's mutation has made her the ultimate incel.
Involuntary celibate until she meets Magneto. And
but
of course, it's going to be toxic.
I do agree. Yeah, I know. Hey, they say girls like a bad boy. Show me a badder boy than Eric Lenscher, a.k.a. Magnus, a.k.a. Magneto. I'll wait for you to show me a badder boy than him. But to your point, David, I think that, that their history, the fact that, you know, the fact that she like so freely in episode 5 is like, oh, yeah, but on second thought, actually, Gambit's really my guy. I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. She already sided with him for half of an episode. So I felt like that seemed to be coming. But do you agree with Nate that maybe we haven't earned Roberto so quickly sidling up to the master of magnetism?
I don't know. Well, yes and no. I don't think we've earned it, but we also haven't earned him being loyal to Professor Xavier.
That's
because
fair.
He gets to the school, Xavier disappears. They don't train the kid. His entire life, he's been afraid of humans, which is why he won't come out in public and show he's a mutant. He's afraid of his parents also. And then our first really showing of him in this show is the Sentinels kidnap him, and he's locked up in a warehouse. So he already knows people want to kill him. They already hate him. So I think he probably has a little more animosity towards humans than he does loyalty towards Xavier's dream, because he was really never taught Xavier's dream. He really didn't. He wasn't around Professor Xavier. So although he doesn't have the earned reason to go to Magneto, he has less of an earned interest not to go to Magneto.
Yeah.
He's like, well,
yeah,
maybe this guy will fix my problems, because at least he's going to do something. And if maybe I can beat up some humans, I'll feel better about myself and maybe find out who I am. But nobody taught him who he was.
Yeah.
He doesn't need, you know, goes to arcades with Jubilee. That's what we've seen him do.
To Daniel Drew's point, he is a volatile teen, and he is very angry in this moment. And the guy who also seems angry is Magneto. And Eric, you sent me something that I had already pulled from the trailer yesterday, but it's important to note that Roberto DaCosta's business card, he does indeed reside at 1 Claremont Avenue. There's so much placement of this, like in the trailer and in the episode. I found that to be fun and, definitely interested in seeing, you know, what they do with Roberto, sort of what's the aftermath of this, because
I want to know what issues those numbers refer to, because I know it's some specific.
Yeah, I was thinking that, but.
That's
I
actually, yeah, no, it's they're like the numbers in Lost. They don't necessarily mean anything. As I'm glancing at them, nothing jumps out. But Daniel Drew, I'm going to put you on this. What do those numbers mean in terms of?
We'll wait.
Exactly. So. Yes, we're getting a couple of bless yous. And oh, Kemi Egan's onto it. It's Jenny's new number. Yeah, you can no longer get her at 865-8675-309. Yes. So thank you, Kemi Egan, for making a joke that I would. So much appreciated. Katie, your thoughts on sort of this division in the team, specifically the two members of our group who end up siding up to Magneto.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Rogue coming for sure from a mile away. Like, she's pissed. She's already killed somebody. She's ready to go. Yeah. Sunspot was so obvious to me, because I think exactly to Brody's point, like, he's the one-off character that they've introduced in the beginning and, like, haven't really paid attention to. So I was like, angsty teen we haven't really paid attention to except for like fun little side missions, he's gonna turn like that, like so easily. Even if it wasn't Magneto, it was gonna be Dr. Sinister, or it was gonna be someone else. Like, I knew that kid was turning the moment he had the chance.
just to interject, by the way, the thinking, it's kind of like the way that the character of Pyro had been shown in the big screen movies. You know, he was always waiting for a better offer. And then Magneto comes along. He's like, yeah, you know what? How about that? But sorry, finish your thought, Katie. But I was like, yeah, it definitely seemed like that. Yeah.
It just felt like he was like, it was, we were waiting for the moment he was going to break Jubilee's heart. And I don't think he's completely done that yet. Even though he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I hit you. I'm like, you're battling. What are you talking about? So who knows what comes next for his character? I mean, obviously probably all of you, but I thought, I thought their fight was interesting and useless at the same time.
The one takeaway I had from it was the idea like, oh, they might actually be fairly evenly matched.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No. Shot, bro.
So Sunspot, you don't think
so much more powerful?
He's so much more powerful, but like he's not discovering how to use his powers or what.
She has the shades. That's the key. The shades.
That's the one thing you can do to block out Sunspot. Put on your sunglasses and like, the future's so bright. I can't be
the sunglasses.
No, but I think he's very uncomfortable using his powers at this point, and maybe he doesn't even realize how powerful he is. But I thought he was good. Yeah, well, let's be honest. That's a New Mutants costume. You know, he doesn't have, you know, I mean, it forges in one too. But anyway, I thought it was definitely interesting. I liked his, but I'm sorry. And she's like, oh, I mean, she doesn't say this, but it's like, oh, is that supposed to make it okay? Here's a bunch of fireworks up your ass. All right. Yeah. So I did enjoy the way that that went. Eric, I want to ask you sort of the same thing. The Rogue and Sunspot siding up with Magneto.
I actually thought there would be more. I mean, it's funny. It's like, Magneto doesn't necessarily need that much help. I mean, the dude was able to turn off all the power of the entire planet. So he's doing fine on his own.
So you're saying he's as powerful as Y2K. I think you're right.
Right. Even more so the fear of Y2K, which was the most powerful drug of all. And so I actually did think a couple more of them might get in the mix. And definitely with Cyclops, that moment of him watching, you know, almost having to do his own, sorry for the reference, but the Sophie's Choice, his son, his wife, I think like that's a moment that could break a guy. And so I feel like Cyclops is so close to the heel turn that, I want the face of Christian. I always enjoy that and close up. But I think here the Sunspot change, you know what it's missing is you brought up a great example from X-Men 2, Christian, the Pyro has one of the best scenes in the X-Men and X-Men 2, which means it's one of the best cinematic moments in the X-Men lore, was when Wolverine got shot in the head and Pyro loses his shit. He's like, I'm the most, you know the things they tell you about mutants, well, I'm the most powerful one of them all. And we see that moment of change. And I think that's the thing maybe they're missing with Sunspot. I buy into angry teen. I think Daniel Drew had a nice point. I think he's, you guys brought up, he hasn't really been at the knee of Professor Xavier yet. So he hasn't really been taught the sort of good of the X-Men mission. Yeah, he has Jubilee, who's lovely. But sometimes love just ain't enough, as Christian taught me many times. And so in essence, he doesn't have a compass yet. He really doesn't the powers are something he's finally kind of embracing. I love that when he went with Magneto, he was full on sunspotting. And I think, you know, Magneto may remind him of his father. You know, that's something to consider too. Since we haven't really gotten a representation of dad yet, I'm curious if maybe Magneto makes him feel so safe, so to speak. But I think that's the one scene that maybe they missed, was that one moment that changes Sunspot in a way that then when Magneto offers his hand, he's like, sure.
But I think radicalizing moment.
That's it. Exactly.
To pull on that for a second, Nate, it could be a radicalizing moment, or, you know, it's a little bit more cliche, but the understanding, caring moment of like, oh, my dad's an asshole. this guy would be a great dad, you know, and I it wouldn't be as on the nose as that, but it could be sort of either way. It could also be both radicalizing and accepting.
Like something with the interaction with him last week with the powers and him getting arrested and all that stuff. We just needed one thing of him going full, you know, sunspotted up and being like, you know what? I am a mutant. And then like start blasting sentinels or something. And then you have that sense that he's like, he's decided like, yes, I am a mutant, whatever that means. And then he's presented with this opportunity with this character that he's familiar with, as opposed to this bald guy who just showed up and no one even was like, oh, we're so happy you're back. Like, so I think
good
that
point.
just some
I
little,
don't appreciate
like,
the bald shaming though. comes with his follicles. It's not, it happens to a lot of us.
Okay. Well, I wasn't going to shame him for the other thing. Okay. So,
so
ooh, we're going there today.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, and Nate, like X-Men 2, sorry to circle back to it, but there's a really key moment in later in that film when Magneto talks to Pyro, and he's basically like, you know, what you do is magnificent. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. So exactly. Like, I think that's another beat it could have had is Magneto basically saying like, almost like, you're seeing, you're heard. I get you. Join my team. It's going to be a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it is, but just they didn't really give us that. They didn't show
and
that.
And also, I would have loved to just like a split second scene before they get there of him like talking to him or something, right? Like to kind of reinforce this, like, you made the right decision, son. We're going to do what's right for mutants, whatever. And if they go in the direction that I think they're going with this storyline, we're probably not going to get that. So,
oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, no, I think it's I think that there I agree there's probably one beat in that story that would have helped it seem like maybe a little bit less forced and rushed, but again, there's so much that they're trying to do. Eric, I want to stick with you as we go ahead, Mr. Brody.
I'm sorry, there was when the X-Men were gathered on Xavier before Magneto showed up, Sunspot did call Professor X out, which I thought was ballsy
that's true.
You know, he's like, you left this in the hands of the bad guy, whatever he said. Yeah. And I thought, you're ballsy to talk to the professor that way. But I think
met him.
Right. I think that may have been
the signs of a kid who will turn.
Yeah.
I think that may have been the beat. The fact that he's the one who stood up and said something to him in that moment in front of everyone when he barely knows the guy. He's like, no, it's your fault, dude. You know, your way isn't working, whatever he said. And I thought, like, that's what said to me he's going to leave because he had no place saying that, like standing up to Xavier.
It's a good point. So now it's almost like, would it have been redundant if there was a beat with Magneto? I still feel like it could have helped, but thank you for paying attention during the episode because I did forget that moment. But I take notes during these episodes and I'm like, I can't write down everything that happens. I think that that might have had something to do with his decision. I want to talk about Scott for a moment and specifically want to start with Eric because you sent me this image of him, this close up. And shout out, by the way, to the return of the skull cap for Cyclops, which had not existed on this show previously. It's sort of the majority of the time that the character existed before the very late 80s, he had that skull cap. So I kind of liked seeing sort of the little flashback look for him. But he was really the same old Scott, really. But your thoughts about some of the stuff that Scott has to deal with in this episode, Eric?
Well, he's brought into the middle of this fight, and you know, you could see how this could destroy him. You know, I think it's left incredibly unresolved, right? Like he's sort of brought in, and then the rug's pulled out from under our feet immediately. So. It's I mean, that alone is a fascinating thing to see what happens next time. And particularly because they also finally got him and his son bonding. You know, give him hell, son. You know, so he's actually finally, I don't know, acting like a dad who loves his son, even though they haven't really been warm and cuddly for the season thus far. And I think that's what you do, right? You get us all of a sudden involved in the relationship. So then when he has to potentially choose one or the other, you know, it's going to, in essence, kill him. So no, I think that's a great moment that they're building towards. I'm curious how they pay it off next week, if they do, or if that's something that might rear its head a little more season two. But it feels like so many things are coming to a head. I can't imagine next episode's going to be a short one. I mean, it's just like so much to tie up, and 30 minutes doesn't feel like it might be enough time.
I've said that before. There'll be a part three next week. Yeah.
Okay.
I've said that before with Disney Plus, where I'm like, well, I can't imagine it'll be a half hour because it's the finale, and then they drop 28 minutes on us. But I do agree that I think we'll get more. And I'm sorry, what were you saying, Katie, about it being a part three?
Oh, just the fact that I didn't realize it was going to be labeled as a part three. Because ended, I was like, what, another cliffhanger? What's happening? Yeah. So I don't have much hope that we're going to get a lot of resolution in this next episode, but we are going to get a lot of drama.
I think there'll be a lot of drama. I think there will actually be a surprising amount of resolution, and about half of it will be undone by new events, things that we can theorize at the end of the episode. But let me ask you, Katie, what you thought of Cyclops in this episode.
This poor tortured bastard. they have put him through hell and back this entire first series of this new iteration. between Jean and then his son and all of this stuff. And I agree, like, he was kind of prepped and primed to be someone who goes and joins Magneto. And the fact that, like, we see more of the Scott that still challenges Xavier, respectfully, but hey, you gave us this life that we wanted to live, but we were always coming back to the X-Men. Like, we always have to come back to this. And the fact that Xavier doesn't quite get that, and hoped that they could just live a nice life was a beautiful moment. I thought that was really great. And then you see Scott just being ever the captain and breaking everybody up. You're on blue team, you're on gold team. We're going to do this. Let's just get going. Time for this kind of stuff. He even says it to Sunspot, like, time for this kind of stuff is over. We got to go work. But then this final moment where where Jean is in the blast force and calls out to him. I was like, well, Cyclops is, I think, ready to turn.
Well, he sort of did, didn't he? Because of the Jean thing.
Oh, I mean,
He does. He does stop Charles. Yeah,
he pulled the Star Lord, basically.
That's literally what I was about to say. that moment where they pretty much stop the Infinity Gauntlet snap from happening, and then Star Lord's upset because his girlfriend's dead. And I get it; that's probably upsetting. But it's literally the same thing. Scott's like, "Oh no, Gene, there's a lot going on.
Come for the marvel, stay for the compassion."
Yeah, I hope Cyclops realizes whatever happens to Wolverine, it's his fault.
He doesn't. That's an extra bonus on top
for Cyclops.
For Cyclops,
win.
So I'll run very short defense for him. While he definitely pulled a Star Lord, it's not exactly the same. Because if they did neutralize Magneto and he reversed the polarity, all the Prime Sentinels come back on. And if they haven't taken down Bastion, then they just lose. So strategically, you know, it's not quite as like just like my girlfriend's dead, so now I'm going to ruin everything.
Right.
He had a pretty solid reason to do that.
Yeah, no, I do think that there was a lot there. And, you know, obviously it wouldn't have made for good storytelling. What Charles would have needed to do was, you know, the helmet comes off. Great. I'm going to paralyze you for, I don't know, 8 to 25 minutes while they finish up destroying the Sentinels. And then I'm going to turn everything back on. So, that would have been the practical approach, but I guess it seemed very urgent in that moment. And I don't know how long Charles can actually keep Magneto at bay. I think that that is something that there could be a variety of instances of different answers to. I mean, he needs the helmet to keep him out of his head. But yeah, it did seem like we had that moment. What did you think sort of about the way that that all plays out, Brody, starting with the Cyclops of it all and, you know, kind of backing out to the fact that he's the one who realizes that we can't turn the lights back on yet?
Well, they didn't do a great job of showing Cyclops do the thing. They showed Magneto screaming. Then there was a thing. And then Xavier's chair went back and there was sort of a ruby mist around the chair. And then Cyclops is holding it. Like they pieced it together, but they didn't show Cyclops shooting Professor Xavier. I would have liked to have seen a blatant attack. I had to go back and watch. I was like, what just happened? I thought Magneto overpowered him and was able to break it. Like he broke away. And then I was like, oh no, wait a minute. Cyclops just made a con. Then it all made sense once I watched it a second time.
Right,
I would
have
liked to have seen him shoot Professor Xavier. And then Xavier should have been like, no, like he knew it was coming, and Cyclops had to know, even if he didn't turn the lights back on at the right time, whatever, that Magneto is now going to kill you all or do something close to that. You know, he's crazed and he's going to get his helmet back and he's going to, you know, you only get one chance. How many times have they tried to pull his helmet off over the years and not been able to do it? Right. So, and then Wolverine missed. he missed his heart.
That's the real question, because it sure looks like he got him good.
Yeah, but it looks like it's his right side, not his left side. So
it looks Wolverine's like never been good at anatomy.
Yeah, maybe I think he got him in the right lung, maybe, but you know, not through the heart, not through the head. I mean, if you want to kill him, you just go through his head.
I was aiming for the spleen.
Yeah. He gave a good speech about, you know, the hero goes first. Okay, but. You're the hero, so be careful here what you're predicting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is one of those moments that, you know, where you seem to feel like, oh, okay, I guess maybe they're going to wrap this up here. And, oh, wow. And this is what I was referencing earlier, though, just the blood on the claws. I'm like, yeah, all right, Disney Plus definitely pushing the envelope much further than I ever thought they would, you know. So
this wasn't even the most gruesome.
No, it is not the most gruesome. I agree, but that was the sort of the first most gruesome that we had up until that point.
Well, Wolverine kissing Jean was pretty gross.
agree to disagree, but I know what you're saying. Yeah, exactly. No, he kissed Madeline. So as we end the episode, and it is this. This moment that sort of begins in X-Men 25 and continues in Wolverine 75 way, way, way back when, but this moment in Fatal Attractions when he has the adamantium ripped off of his bones, which is, I don't think until it happened that I had ever let my mind think, yeah, but what if that happened, you know? So, I mean, it's definitely one of those iconic things that I think the fact that they're dealing with it at all, if they are going to do it, and it looks like they are, I would hope that it's not resolved as quickly as Storm getting her powers back, you know, the next episode that she was actually in. Nate, I want to get your thoughts on this, because I know that sort of like me, you knew we were gearing up for this, especially all this talk of Fatal Attractions. And it is such an important character moment for Wolverine, you know, having this happen to him. What did you think about the way it played out? And do you think he's going to have the adamantium stripped off of his bones in the next episode?
I'll go backwards. Yes, I do think it's going to be taken off. I think it opens up a lot of character opportunities. It makes for some cool stuff they can explore with Wolverine, and you know, there's all kinds of cool backstory stuff that happens when this happens. And also it gives an excuse to do some Wolverine stuff. That's not just Wolverine being, you know, the best there is at what he does and being unstoppable. It's nice to have him be kind of like slightly nerfed a little bit, storytelling wise.
Yeah, that's true.
I also think too, specifically motivation wise, like with Magneto, Magneto does this because he goes, yeah, we are really at war, and I have to take you off of the table because you actually have been in war, and you will do what needs to be done when the others will like hesitate. So I think that it for Magneto, it's absolutely necessary because he doesn't want to kill him. He still has that mutant supremacist thing where he doesn't want to do harm to mutants,
sure,
but he will strip them, you know, and for him, it fits in with the mutant purity thing also too, like of like, this isn't even part of your mutant power. This is something that humans did to you. You know, they made you weaker. Otherwise I wouldn't be able to do anything to you. I think they're going to stick with it. I hope they stick with it. The way like the way that this scene played out, like this frame, says to me that it's happening, and that I think it's not going to just, he's not going to like be like, all right, that hurt, didn't it? Here, let me put it back in now. Like, and I think we're not going to see more of it after this. We'll just see the aftermath, because again, like this is, you know, if you look at some of those panel shots from 25, like it's gruesome of it getting like stripped from his, you know, whole skeleton. So I think this is as far as they're going to go with it. What was the other? It was really good. It was just a really well choreographed fight scene. I do agree with David, and it's like that, you know, the people have to be in the right place for the, in order for the narrative to keep happening. I would say that, you know, even with him being metal, he's one of the stronger X-Men, so it makes sense to bring him. I don't know. It does, especially by the end of the episode, you're like, why are you there? Why are you there? Man, it was just so good. I just really did not think that they were going to do this. And once he got the helmet off and he was controlling him, and then Magneto got control back and put the helmet on Xavier, I was like, oh my God. I kept looking at my partner. My partner was looking at me like, are you okay? I'm like, they're going to do it. She's like, they're going to do what? I'm like, they're going to do it. And then they did it. And it was just like, I've been waiting for this for like my whole childhood, like to see this like play out, and just the possibilities that this opens up and what this set signals to me of like stories that they want to adapt. I'm just so excited. Like,
it signals to me, you have a brutal wish list of things to happen.
It's the aftermath. It's
a kid. I wanted to see the bones being stripped of their metal and Wolverine in his ultimate pain in live action. Oh, yes, mommy, let it happen, mommy. Bring the tooth fairy.
Wolverine was a much more interesting character when they talked about like the struggles and stuff that he went through. Like, there was a big period of Wolverine stories that have the Superman problem of like he's unstoppable. He's like, he can't die. So when he got stripped of that and we got Bone Claws Wolverine, it's not that I wanted to see him suffer and I wanted to see the gore, but it's the pain. And then the rise, it's just like the life death thing, right? Like, it's when you lose something, that makes when you get it back and like the journey back, like that's what makes great characters and great storytelling.
True. So, dear like, Santa, and, please and strip Wolverine tell you, of his adamantium.
Yes. Yes.
Brutally in front of me.
So I can see his flesh be ripped apart. Dear Santa, please.
Please. Because if they're willing to do this, then they're willing to commit to a lot of the weird and terrible stuff that happens to X-Men, which has created some fantastic storylines.
You're smiling more.
Yes. Well, because this
is the first time I've seen you smile so much.
Yes.
They could do New Mutants, or not New Mutants. They could do No More Mutants. They could do House of M. They could like
a perfect New Mutants. What are you talking about? That movie,
Avengers vs. X-Men. Like, there's so many things that they could do, and they have signaled that they might actually do them. They're not like you know, film TV sanitizing everything to make it kind of like less comic booky. Like, what's more comic booky than pulling the metal out? Like, a lot of people don't even know. Won't even have the context for what is happening to him, because they haven't really, like, we're going to get to explore. I don't want to ramble on and on about Wolverine.
No, like, I know what you're saying, though. It's not so much the fact that it happens. And by the way, this guy has the healing factor. So he'll have to walk it off.
It's the Weapon X stuff. Like, this means we're going to go get more Weapon X flashbacks. We're going to get, you know, butt naked except for metal instruments Wolverine, right? Like, we're gonna get flashbacks of like his backstory and stuff, and that to me is way more interesting of Wolverine stuff, of him off on his own journey on his motorcycle being angry Canadian guy, than him just, you know, like the the Wolverine Nightcrawler stuff with the Sentinels was cool, but the reason why they did it for that one episode is if you have him fight in every episode, he just ends the fights like too quickly because he's so strong. Like, he can't be stopped. He can cut through anything. So I don't know. I'm excited for this change. I also, too, really quick, I didn't know if you had a plan for this or whatever, but I wanted to talk about the Jean Grey Sinister fight because I thought that was awesome. The animation was really cool. Them going toe-to-toe with each other and then culminating in Cable unleashing his telekinetic powers, which we have not seen him use nary almost at all. He's just been using his guns.
Yeah.
And that was some anime stuff right there. The shadow jumping, the giant energy blasts, like the animators were really showing off this episode.
The telekinetic, you're basically the telekinetic like balls that she's like telekinetic grenades really that she's like having explode on him. And I think that that sinister actually seeing him do stuff instead of standing around looking cool, I do agree that it's easy to push past that sequence, but you're absolutely right, Nate, it was great. It's definitely overshadowed by what happened at the end of the episode, but obviously we're going to see more of that in episode 10. But Brody, the incident at Asteroid M, the bloody mess that Wolverine seems to have been a part of, your thoughts on watching this play out?
Well, I agree with Nate. I think there's an opportunity to show the Weapon X program and Wendigo and, maybe Guardian and Alpha Flight and, his past. So listen, everything that happens is a storyline, right? It's a branch. Now you can tell all of this stuff because he doesn't have the adamantium. You're right. The Superman effect is a great way to explain it. He's Wolverine. I thought if you're smart, if you're Magneto, you'll leave a little metal on the bones so you can still you can still control him. You can still make his claws go to his face if you want. Like, I wouldn't take all the metal out because that's your advantage over Wolverine is having actual metal in him. So I would take out like 88% of the metal and leave a little maybe in his groin area. So you can just like
his fillings.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point, though, because now, all right, he's got the healing factor. At some point, he's going to be able to sneak up on you again. And you're not going to be able to stop him next
time. Right. Leave a little metal,
Yeah.
Just a little, maybe in a skull, something.
Just one toe. Like
the groin is where I'm still trying to work out the science of that.
Katie's got it figured out. She laughed and then she's like, no, I get it.
Oh, no, I get it.
Rag-balling around.
Is it clanging?
Which bones did the adamantium attach to?
Well, there's not a lot of bones there, just the pelvic bones. Everything else is cartilage, as you know.
That's what I was wondering.
When we start talking pelvic bones, obviously it's time to ask Katie what she thinks of the sequence and the way that it played out on screen in episode 9 of X-Men 97, Tolerance is Extinction Part 2.
I'm really glad that we always bring it back to me whenever penises come up, because it's my favorite topic.
Oh, is there a penis that came up in this episode?
No, this was one of the most gruesome scenes. And I agree, the animation in this episode in particular, especially, when Cable went off with his psychic powers, everything, all of it. I even messaged you, Christian, when the image of Magneto, almost like frying with his eyes that send me that photo because that's so meme worthy. But the images in this were so intense and so cool. And then we get this and I was like, oh my God. Like I had heard tell of this storyline of the adamantium being ripped from his skeleton. And I completely had forgotten about it until this moment. And I had no thought that it wasn't what was happening right now, because as he's writhing in pain and we see these sort of silvery things lifting off of his body, I was like, oh my God, he's stripping him back to the bone. And that was so gruesome that I was also on the treadmill that I had to stop and just be like, holy shit, that was too much.
Humble brag.
Listen,
I was deadlifting 500 pounds and I said, oh my God, look at that scene.
Oh, I gotta
move from one side of the couch to the other.
Listen, if I ever dream to be in a chicken suit costume ever again, you know, I got to get this body back in shape.
Chicken wing.
Chicken wing. Yep. Mm-hmm. The suit that covers my entire body. I got to make sure that I look good. But it was one of those things that was like, I am so impressed with how far not just the show has gone, but the animation has gone, the storylines have gone. They have jam-packed so much into these episodes, but I've been so grateful for how much there is in there. I know, Brody, you're gonna make fun of me for it. I want longer ones. Like, I'm with Nate on this. Like, the torture is immense, but it's like, I need to know more. And it is intense, but it's so well done. And I think this might be like one of the things that hopefully they have more focus on in future seasons and episodes, because they've done a bang up job. And poor Wolverine, this is going to be just as intense emotionally, I think, for him.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it also introduces the idea that having the adamantium added to his skeleton was actually much worse than this.
Yeah. Which is one of the things that was like, okay, if we are doing that journey to go back to that, like, what does that entail along with all of the flashbacks of seeing the adamantium being added to a skeleton?
Yeah.
And not just in the way that we saw sort of a brief blip in some of the movies.
And the bone claw Wolverine is it's definitely interesting to explore the character when that aspect of him isn't there, and it's not like he doesn't use the bone claws well. You know, it was the introduction of the bone claws is actually in one of the images I showed earlier, Wolverine 75, and Larry Hama is credited for writing that. And one of the times that I spoke with Chris Claremont, it dawned on me that I should ask him, like, if you had kept writing, were you planning on revealing that Wolverine had bone claws? He's like, oh yeah, I had talked to Larry about that at some point, and we thought it would be a cool reveal somewhere down the road. Yeah. I don't think he would have done it when they did it, but it just makes so much sense. And it is a pretty amazing reveal from the comic books, where you see him pop the bone claw, because obviously it's like, wow, if they pull off his adamantium, then he's not gonna have his claws anymore. Oh, no, he does.
Yeah.
So it's pretty great to sort of see how he has to, I don't know, I think he'll approach every battle a little bit differently. What, you know, once he stops bleeding, which actually happens pretty quickly. Speaking of stopping the bleeding, Eric Connor, what do you think about watching this play out at the climax of episode 9?
Brady, were you going to say something there?
No, I can wait. Go ahead, please.
All right.
Thank you, though.
Of course. You know, bone claws, they look cool. I always have so many questions about the practicality of them in the way now I have questions about the practicality of metal in one's crotch area. That might be the work I do this week. And on
TSA is going to catch that.
Yeah, I know, but not on my computer. I'll use my I mean, this image was so gnarly, and the second it was happening, I was like, I know people who are going to be very happy with this come Wednesday at noon. And this was the moment that we were all like, could it happen? Could it happen? Yes, it could. And they did not pull a punch with the visualization of it. And the fact that it cuts in the middle of it, I think, was even the most shocking part of it, because then it sort of hovers with you as you go through the credits, and all of a sudden it's like all the little imagery of their powers and them twirling in that very rudimentary 3D state,
right?
You're just still like shook. And so I mean, I'm stoked to see like where they start this next episode. But I don't know, for me, the bone claw thing, you're right, it's Nate, you're hitting a good point. Like, yeah, it makes Wolverine very mortal. Like, I don't know, maybe because I'm sure all of us have broken bones at some point, and I don't have the same faith in bones I do in adamantium. I just don't. And so when I see someone coming at me with a bone claw, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'd have a fighting shot against those. Adamantium claws, not so much. So making Wolverine a little bit more mortal is kind of a fascinating turn on him. And also, too, because these last few episodes, Wolverine's really come more front and center than he had in the first half of the season. Correct, so then where will that leave him in season two, particularly because we didn't get into the powerless storm. So I think like Wolverine now having to figure out, well, who am I? If I literally had a large percentage of my body taken from me, where does that leave me? I think that's going to be interesting stuff to explore. They did in the comic, but here I just hope they do give it the bandwidth because there's a lot there to unpack, literally, metaphorically, figuratively. And I think this show has demonstrated it's willing to go there, albeit it might go there rather quickly.
Yeah, and I think that you touched on something interesting, that if they had spent a lot of time of Storm dealing with that loss, then they wouldn't really be able to like, okay, and now Wolverine's going to go through kind of the same thing. He's still going to have his powers, though. I mean, but he's still going to have the healing factor. So in a lot of ways, he's only slightly less beatable. You know, slightly more beatable, I mean, you know, without...
Well, maybe he has his powers, but not his weaponry. Because I think, you know, again, what those adamantium blades can do versus the bone blades are very...
Yeah.
I'm not agreeing with myself. It definitely puts a bit of a cap on his...
Did you do this thing? Did you go thumbs up?
I talk with my hands. That's what you do.
He's doing the Fallout.
He's being punished.
Fallout, I was thinking.
I just random question that is probably a really far-fetching theory, but in the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, when he's got whiskey claws, are they adamantium or are they bone?
Those are adamantium.
Darn. I was like, ooh, are we doing a thing?
They, you know, they might do that on the screen.
I know they done bone. I wasn't sure if we're going to have a little connection between the two.
I think they'll be completely separate storytelling.
I've seen a lot of people theorize that, but it makes more sense if they want to continue to make this incredibly successful thing for it not to. So I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Chris? Christian?
Yes, sir.
I think two things. This episode has proven that the brown uniform that Wolverine is wearing is unlucky for him. Because it lasted about an hour in his in real time, so I'm still team yellow and blue. Also, you mentioned Storm went through something similar earlier in the season, but what does she do? How does she comfort him? She goes up to him and says, "Hey, listen, I know how you feel. I lost the ability to fly for like 2 whole weeks."
There was like an hour where I couldn't make it rain. Okay.
All right. So feel my pain. Yeah, he had to hit the metal ripped from his bones through his skin. He's lost who he is. And she's like, yeah, it didn't rain for a while. I totally get where you're coming from. And then all of a sudden it could rain again, but I get you. Like not quite the same. So well,
she did have to defeat her like inner demon owl.
Logan, I also fought a big bird that was in my mind. So, you know, don't complain about your blood and you're being ripped apart or that Nate was happy for you. Just know that I there was no wind for a while. I couldn't make it windy.
I was in the desert and it didn't rain.
Yeah.
American Cupcake jumping in on the chat. Hot take from when I first saw in college, like Goku Wolverine without adamantium on his bones would be significantly less heavy. So hence he would probably be able to fight better. Not something that quicker. I thought about, but he would definitely be faster. So where he loses resilience from the adamantium on his bones, he would gain dexterity and speed. And also, Kama Egan, do you think Bishop comes through a portal next week? They've referenced him a few times to make sure we didn't forget him. Right. I think that could also be sort of, you know, that could be our final moment in the final episode, which I do think brings us to there's a couple of fun things we'll share at the very end of the episode, but I want to ask each and every one of you what you think we're going to get next week. And again, we're going to be at the same time next Wednesday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, talking about the season finale, episode 10, Tolerance is Extinction, part 3 of X-Men 97. What do you think we'll be talking about next week at basically this time, Nate?
I think we're going to be talking about how the end of the episode is kind of adjusting the status quo. I personally, like with the pace that they've been going at things, I'm just really hoping that we don't just solve the Bastion problem next week. I'm hoping that it becomes an ongoing thing. I don't want us to just go right into Onslaught. I want us to, if they're going to, you know, do that to Magneto, have us sit with it for a bit. Like, I'm starting to get slightly nervous about them speeding through some stuff. But mostly I think we're just going to be talking about how it's going to be a devastating wait for when the next season comes out. I think it's going to be really satisfying. I especially with the way these first two, like, two-parters ended, I do think it's going to be a, you know, happy good guys win ending with, like, maybe a little asterisk on there. Because we've so far, like, things have not been going great at the end of these episodes. And I like that when they do that, though, because then when they do win in the end, they triumph in the end, it means something. They, you know, they sacrifice something, they earned it. I'm excited. I will be absolutely devastated and also shocked if they don't nail the landing on this one, because every episode has been so solid and it's been building towards something. I really don't like to get too excited for things anymore because I've been disappointed so many times. But man, I am really excited for the finale. It's just been so fun.
I told you not to get excited for the Snyderverse, but you didn't listen to me. I said you should temper your expectations, Nate.
I said there's no such thing as too much slow-mo, Christian.
Like, it's not like he's going to zoom in on a sesame seed on a hamburger bun. I mean, he's not going to do anything crazy. David Brody, what do you think and hope we see next week in the season finale of X-Men 97?
I do not want to see Onslaught unless maybe a slight tease. Like Nate said, I want to slow it down. I want to fight Bastion or Sinister, or maybe have Sinister be ultimately defeated, but not Bastion. I wouldn't mind seeing a couple more X-Men show up. As someone who didn't watch the old show, I'm not sure why Colossus isn't around. If you could explain that to me, but he's made of metal, so maybe in a Magneto storyline, not the best guy to bring forward.
Not the best guy, yeah.
We learned that with Wolverine. You know, again, Bishop, I could take him or leave him if he shows up or not. But I would like to see also, I think Sinister gets it and Bastion doesn't. I think I'd be happy with that. I think Bastion is the big bad, and maybe he, you know, he's part of the Onslaught storyline next season, but one of the two bad guys needs to go. And maybe Xavier's sister shows up, in something at the end. Maybe. I don't know if that's too early in the comic book storyline, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the beauty of it. There's so much that's going to happen. Cammy Egan, I wanted to share your comment, but it didn't pop up. There it is. I think Rogue is going to turn on Magneto. I agree on that part. Watching what he just did to Logan is not going to go well for him. Yep. Gambit resurrected from the dead. You know, I've been saying that all season. I'm starting to think that maybe he's going to stay dead. But, you know, let's get to next week before I say for sure. And we do have to see how the whole team reacts to what Magneto did. I guess the version of Roberto that we've gotten is like, well, I didn't know him anyway. So I guess I'll stay team Magneto. Katie, what do you think? How much more bloodshed will there be next week, Katie?
You know, if they kill Sunspot, I won't be mad. I know they're not going to. I know there's more to the story. I know he's probably got a nice, rich story, but I'm over him. I think we're getting a little bit of an Empire Strikes Back moment. I think we're not going to have a full win. We're going to have... Yeah. A partial cliffhanger that'll keep us interested for season two. The problem is I hope we get season two as soon as possible, but I don't think we will. That's the main thing that I'm wondering is, like, when will season two happen? Because I know we're not going to be very fulfilled at the end. Like, I think there's going to be a very satisfying, very intense, very in-depth story, but it's going to be 30 minutes and then we're going to cut black and then have the little credits going and it's like hopefully we get season two soon.
I don't know, I feel like Disney Plus does this a lot. They're gonna probably let us know next week when we might expect it. Is it 20? Is it 2025? The one thing in its favor is that we know that they were already working on season two long before this premiered, because they knew that they were doing a second season. It's the third season pickup that happened as we started here, but it is animation. It does take a while. If there's anything I've learned about television in the streaming era, and really even in the cable era, if you need more time to make it good, we'll be okay with it. It's when you take a long time and then what we get is garbage, then we're like, oh, all right.
And that's truly like what I would rather. I would rather you make me wait a long time so that I know that it's good, instead of just being like, wait a long time and then here's a half-hearted effort.
Yeah. Daniel Drew, you're usually more optimistic than this. I say it'll be before 2026, sometime next year, maybe not this time next year, but before the end of next year.
Maybe late next year.
That's my guess, but we will possibly know. Yeah. And Eric Connor, I know that you touched on one of the things that you enjoyed the most from this episode. We didn't really get to talk that much about the fact that Morph is Hulk, and he does say Morph Smash in this episode. this image reminded me that as I was watching this might be one of the first times where I'm like, the Marvel Girl outfit wasn't as bad as I always thought it was. The Red Phoenix is still the best suit that Jean ever wore, but just the skirt is so impractical for when you're fighting. It's really just put her in some pants, for God's sake.
You scrape your knees a lot.
Do love the mask though, because it's like
the Catwoman mask.
Yeah, what are you hiding with? Yeah, exactly. It's Julie Newmar. Great. Yeah.
She's putting her hair back, is what it is.
It's like, for fashion. It's not for identity protection.
Yeah, she's going to the Eyes Wide Shut party.
Well, now that's my new hope for the season finale, I have to be honest. There you go.
Is that it just goes full Eyes Wide Shut. I want to know sort of your thoughts, on what we're going to get next, Eric.
Well, it does feel like it's kind of a crowded house of villains right now. So, at least one of them is not going to be surviving the next 30 minutes of X-Men 97. So one of them will go. Probably new one's going to pop up towards the end. But they have enough here to deal with. I feel like if they're going to try and set up like a new big bad, it would be real crowded to put him or her anywhere but the tip end of the episode. I think there's going to be maybe one or two more twists. I agree. I could see Rogue switching back. But I also could see someone betraying Xavier as well. I mean, I feel like Xavier still has a whole lot of people on his side of the line. So it wouldn't be crazy that someone else joins up with Magneto along the way. Although with what he's doing with Wolverine, that might be it's like, all right. Fun and games is over, guys. We got to have a real talk. This is getting a little out of hand. I mean, like Jubilee and Sunspot, their fighting was kind of like this variety, you know.
You'd almost say it was a lot of fireworks, wouldn't you say that, Eric?
Don't go chasing fireworks. In the end of it all,
baby, a firework.
I hate you all.
You should. Yeah, I know. You didn't miss us even a little, did you, Katie?
You should hate most. Not all. Not all.
Don't group me into this.
Yeah, Nate, I was gonna say, don't drag Nate.
No, you're right. Nate
deserves none of your scorn.
Throwing me under the bus. I've been wanting to try on the Wolverine costume.
Looks better on him.
Oh, look, the heads almost lined up.
Yeah, the Wolverine head's actually kind of lining up.
In your case, it looks more like MODOK.
Yeah. All right, settle down. Good.
So in the end of it all, I mean, they have so much here to work with. I can see this last episode just being a nonstop action. Yeah. Like, I don't know if they're going to have time for much in the way of nuance, because there's just so much stuff that's boiling.
And they
stopped mid-boil, like you were saying before, Katie. It's part three. It's kind of like they... Yeah. I can't imagine a time leap. I can't imagine this thing's going to be set 2 weeks later. It's like, no, like they're in the mid action. So I think it's going to be, in essence, a couple more bodies hit the floor. And in the end of it all, like someone's going to be showing up in the shadows right at the end. We're all going to freak out. And then we're going to have to wait 2 years. I don't know how long until season two. Yeah. But I think whatever it may be, they've really, over the course of, is this 9 episodes? I've started to lose.
So this was 9. And yeah. Next episode is the finale. Yes.
Well, and I think they've also, you know, it's kind of like saying to everyone, you know, the TV formula can work beautifully with this because the TV formula should. I mean, so many of our favorite titles were limited series in comic books. So in essence, like this one, I think succeeded because it went to what makes comics work. And the TV shows, sometimes they feel like neither fish nor fowl. They're not quite a movie, not quite a TV show. And I think hopefully this encourages them, like, no, trust the structure of TV. Trust the episodic nature, the procedural parts of these things, because that's what comic books have done for decades and decades, and it's worked pretty well. So hopefully this is a harbinger of things, good things to come for the Marvel TV side of stuff, because they definitely have they've been pretty spotty the last like 2 years. So
yeah,
hopefully more good to come.
Especially about a year ago at this time when the show that we shall not speak its name happened. You mentioned 30 minutes being all we have left in the season, and it reminded me that there was obviously the inside joke in this episode that we played from a trailer in a previous week when Cyclops says to Cable, "What did you want? Green black leather instead of the spandex." But then also there was the inside joke in this. Morph was barely on the team 30 minutes because he died in the series premiere, the original one. So I thought that was great. But also Magneto had this line that I hadn't been able to work into the conversation. So I'm just going to mention that it was well written. Gods abandon those who believe in them. Mutants do not. So I think Blaze, he's not an American citizen, and he's also a fictional character, so I guess we can't vote for Magneto in November, but you know, keep him in your hearts.
Third party Magneto.
Yeah. From an old friend, Corbin Branson. Sup, homie? I saw you were live and wanted to say hi. I haven't watched any of the new X-Men. I did do a Logan spoof on my gun channel a while back. And he explained that he was Corby from Branson. And I explained that I've known him a long time. He's the only person I know who would be on YouTube as Gun Lover. So thank you, Corby, for jumping in and saying hi. All right. We have gone long. And if anybody needs to go right now, it's fine. I have two little things. One of them our buddy Daniel Drew sent to me. Does anybody need to leave right now? Otherwise, we'll do about 5 more minutes. But I don't want to upset Daniel. So I never want to upset Daniel. So there were a couple of really fun things that happened, and I have to make sure I look in the right place. And this happened so long ago. This was like a week ago that Daniel sent this to me. So there's a phone number that you can call, and you can call and talk to Jubilee. And, you know, I'm a sucker for pretty much anything. And except of course for the fact that it's too small on that screen. And I didn't save it to my contacts. Jubilee is not in my fave 5. So
what is she, 15?
She just had her 18th birthday.
Yeah, I know.
You can take out of it the fact that I'm almost 50. All right, it's fine. You know, but anyway,
the edges are burnt.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just happens accidentally. So you call that number, and I meant to call and record it, but this was a week ago. So,
hey, it's Jubilee. I'm so stoked you got my number. Guess what? This May, we're welcoming mutants like you to the X Mansion.
So that's what happens. It is her when you call it. And it is for this Airbnb where you can stay in the X Mansion, which we can go through that.
Oh, that's interesting. Week.
Yeah. It's going to take too long to show all of that. Okay. But,
you're sure it's not just like a To Catch a Predator thing? I mean,
you got to bring your own lemonade and cookies.
Yeah.
Christian, what are you doing here? Why don't you have a seat? I came here to meet Jubilee. I just saw it was her 18th birthday.
She just turned 18.
Your Honor, the episode said she was 18.
And the first comic I ever read her in, I was 11. So, Abby, does that mean...
She's got to be at least 35 now.
All right. Well, now we're getting into crazy talk. But Brody, you shared this with me that I could not finish the show.
Oh no!
Showing this because
that's why it's so familiar.
Artbox TV gives full credit to the account that put this together. Yes. And I'm sorry for our audio audience. Follow at I don't know if you've retweeted this, but at David Brody, make sure you retweet it.
Bo DeMeo retweeted it. That's where I saw it.
Yeah. So now I can't unsee it. Who wore it better is the question in the actual tweet. Blanche is dressed like Jubilee.
Blanche from the Golden Girls.
Blanche from the Golden Girls, yeah. And who wore it better? I love you, Jubilee, but Blanche, clearly.
Blanche.
Clearly
Blanche. What's going on with her head in that photo to the right?
It's clearly look how the photo is taken. It might be on a TV, like one of those kind of fat back TVs.
Little legs, large head.
It's the angle that the photo is taking.
No, it's not. It's something's wrong with Blanche.
It's perspective shot.
Yes, exactly.
Blanche shot.
First, get it, Cammy. Everybody's enjoying all the fun that is happening there. So I wanted to just share that. And I also wanted to make sure that everybody knew that this week or within the next few weeks is when the next Captain America movie was supposed to come out. But it's been pushed to next year. And as I've mentioned to our buddy Eric Connor before, the McDonald's Happy Meal schedule doesn't care about studio reshuffles. You get in on that calendar where they say you get in. So the Captain America Brave New World Happy Meals are now available. And there's only a minor spoiler to the movie in the set. Yeah. There's one character that you're like, okay. That's in the movie. So,
I guess Harrison Ford gets really pissed in one scene.
Now, what's in the bottom right?
We knew that was happening, right?
Yeah, I'm mostly teasing. We haven't seen any images of Red Hulk, but I think that Harrison Ford finally sits down and watches Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and is like, I can't believe he's in this.
Or is that Mephisto?
No, one time that an all red guy is not
Mephisto.
Yeah, we're gonna reference Katie's cool background, which if you guys don't recognize it, it's the painting of Kingpin's painting from the Daredevil Netflix series. If you guys watch that show,
it's a very visual show.
Yes.
Nate, thank you.
There it is. Cammy Egan had a great joke again because it's Harrison Ford. He was telling Cap, get off my plane. There's some announced downsizing. Mm-hmm. Bob Iger says there will be 2 Disney Plus shows per year and 2 to 3 movies per year from Marvel for now. They were definitely getting a little carried away. And I think that because of the strikes and obviously the pandemic, they kept pushing things around. I think 2 shows, 2 movies a year sounds perfect.
Yeah, but does that include animation? Because Ironheart and Wonder Man are already in the can for next year. Yeah. So that means X-Men wouldn't be coming out unless it's an animation.
I think animation might be separate because we're going to get another season of What If as well.
Also, this is going to change.
They
don't stick to anything. Everything evolves as to whatever the shareholders decide.
Right. Yeah. And that was technically their plan initially. That was their plan initially. And then they got far away from it. And then they were too much. It was like,
yeah. Well, and hopefully someone over there understands that the issue is not the oversaturation. The issue is that the movies have just not been good. If every single one of those MCU movies were actually good, actually like was being told by someone who loves the character and the story, and they had like individual voices and weren't just like homogenized, generic, boring superhero movies, then no one would care about how many there are. People would love it. It's the fact that they suck.
They couldn't hire enough CG experts to be good. I saw Corey Stoll on Broadway this week, and the whole time, it's a great show, appropriate with Sarah Paulson and Corey Stoll. However, all I could think of the whole play was that's Yellow Jacket with bad CGI and the big head. And
that's our live action MODOK.
Yeah. MODOK, right. Oh, it was MODOK. So,
I agree. When people talk about sort of the MCU track record, they kind of jump over Guardians 3, which was a year ago right now. That one was successful. In general, people liked it. And if you're able to kind of meet that level of storytelling that gets accepted, then yes, people won't talk about superhero fatigue. And I am going to throw stones. Superhero fatigue is not helped by just the sheer garbage that DC has put out in the last few years.
I didn't
even hate the Flash movie, but I also didn't love it. So, but the Black Adam and Shazam 2 did more disservice to the MCU than the Marvels or Ant-Man Quantumania. Anyway, well,
luckily, Madam Web, I think, though, is a thing that brought it
back. Yeah, that's well, I think we can all agree on that. Yeah.
But Kraken, what's his name? Craven is going to fix over everything.
Not until 2025, he's not.
Right, but it's going to fix everything.
Scheduled it again. But we are getting Venom 3 in time. So make sure we see that. All right.
Passable.
As I said, we've gone incredibly long. We'll be back next week. Also going incredibly long because we'll be looking back at the entire season of X-Men 97. We'll be talking about episode 10, Tolerance is Extinction, part 3, right here on Geekscape. That'll be at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, Brody, and 2 p.m. Central, Kame Egan. And that'll be on the 15th. May 15th, we'll be doing that. So make sure you join us live or you check out the archive version or please subscribe to the audio version of the podcast. Bring us with you. Our jokes will be just as terrible even when you can't see the visuals that go with it. But all of that being said, I want to give everybody their chance to let everybody know how you can keep in touch with them. Nate, where do we keep in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at DogLikeNate with 2 G's.
Oh my God, tiny puppy.
Yes, that's right. You missed the introduction of our newest cast member. And Mr. Brody, where can people find you?
I would like my StreamYard YouTube Instagram name right there again, like we used to have.
It's not on this channel.
We'll wait. I know. You can find me at David Brody on still calling it Twitter and Instagram. And you could find me on the Brooklyn Boys podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Katie, other than in the background on a film that Richard Roper didn't like, Unfrosted, now on Netflix. But, maybe after you watch the Tom Brady roast, see if you can find Katie on Unfrosted. Where else can you be found, Katie?
You can always find me at elsassypants, ELSASSYPANTS, sometimes with a Z at the end. I'll be performing next Wednesday, the 15th, down at the Pack Theater at 8 p.m. for the House Improv Night, if you're into that kind of fun thing. Otherwise, you can find me just beating the pavement, going to all sorts of different casting directors, seeing what's up. There's not much out there. Yay!
But you did get to wear a chicken suit last year, I did. So there's always that.
2 years ago, actually.
a man who never wants to turn down the opportunity to put on a chicken suit. Of course, Eric Connor, where can people find you?
Well, you could find me in my not entirely form-fitting chicken suits everywhere you go. Instagram, Connor, also on X, a.k.a. Twitter. And I have continued now. This is day 3 of my Pop-Tart strike. Until Katie gets full credit for her work in Unfrosted.
I keep
telling you, watch the movie and you will end your strike immediately. Mm-hmm. You will understand that it's no great loss to not be in that film. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @ChristianDMZ. And of course, this show on Geekscape, my personal podcast, The Blackcast. Our most recent episode, I spoke with comedian Don Jameson, and Brody was in the chat, dropping a lot of hard rock and metal knowledge on all of us. So you can find that there. And finally, you shared this image in the email you sent to me. So we had Claremont Road And we have a diner that was named after Beau DeMayo. We make sure that we get there because, as we said earlier in the episode, at one point, Disney Plus decided that they would like to hold DeMayo from this series. And as the great Stan Lee would say, Excelsior!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.